105 Radio.
Of course, Extinction Rebellion have grabbed eyeballs, and no matter how you get your news, whether on the radio, television or online, it's like they're everywhere, and they've put a great deal of thought into their protests. And coming from a country, India, where I know that we have regular kind of protests, and I lived in the capital, so that's where, you know, all the news networks are there. So if you're doing something, you do it in the capital, you get the headlines, and there's a way to do it. There is a science to protest. And Finlay Cox from Cambridge, who was part of the protest there, managed to get himself arrested, but he's safe and sound now, right here in my studio. Good morning, Finlay. How are you doing?
Oh, good. Hello. Afternoon.
It's
actually.
Afternoon.
Yeah,
yeah,
I know.
I'm very well. How are you?
I'm good. You seem nice and chirpy and happy. I think we've grown a lot in these last few days, and we've learned a lot, have we? Was it a
Yeah, I mean, it was important to me to sort of demystify the experience of getting arrested. I wanted to have that something that I think is a show of force. How many of us are willing to do that because we believe this to be such an existential threat?
Yeah.
And so I was aware of all the process of that, and I wanted to live it through.
Let's learn about your journey, with Extinction Rebellion, and your thoughts on why you feel this is so important for you, that, you know, you have thrown yourself headlong into this effort.
Yeah, well, it's important for everyone. It's something that, if I have to say, I put trust in climate scientists and what they're doing and the conclusions they've made about where we're at. If I believe that to be true, then I have a social obligation to do whatever I can to ensure that the government attempts to mitigate these problems in the way we feel that's most accomplishable, is through the actions we're taking now.
Right, right. So tell me about, you know, how many days, you know, have you been part of this protest, this crusade? I know in Cambridge also you were part of those protests where they kind of put things on lockdown on those bridges, isn't that right, in November?
Yeah, that was in London as well, the bridges in November. I have done some actions in Cambridge, swarming actions, which is disruption that we're causing to get attention. We genuinely apologise to people who are, in need of getting somewhere. But this is a desperate attempt, really, for action. Yeah. Letters have already been written to MPs, and then petitions signed, and marches held. And so now we're trying civil disobedience in a non-violent manner.
Yeah.
Because we think that's the next necessary step if we're going to have action.
Mm-hmm. And do you think it's yielded anything, all of these efforts?
Possibly. So Michael Gove has said he will negotiate with us after Greta Thunberg, who is the 16-year-old from Sweden who started the school strike, and she had Fridays off. She went striking on Fridays for climate.
Yeah.
And since after she came to London, Michael Gove agreed to meet with us. How those negotiations go, I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
I
think you guys have scored. Yeah, you guys have scored, because Jeremy Corbyn has now said that he wants Labour to make the UK Parliament the first in the world to declare an environment and climate emergency. He also says he wants the UK to achieve net zero emissions before 2050. And he's praised climate activism, particularly Extinction Rebellion's protests. And he says it's been a necessary wake-up call. That's
high praise, and it's wonderful.
Yeah.
We're worried that 2050 is still too late. So 2050 is the point at which we have to be net zero globally if we're to meet the Paris Climate Agreement 2015.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we think that the UK, with the resources it has, and hopefully the political will, if we can force it, needs to be before that. It needs to be 2025, so that we can reach global carbon neutrality at 2050.
So here's also a question. I mean, you know, while I commend, you know, the time and the effort that the members of Extinction Rebellion and other people who are working around, you know, climate and its issues, why is it, you know, we find disbelief on the other hand? You got, you know, a US president who has just rubbished all of this, and it's all about economics for him. So how do you sort of, how do we make sense of the disbelief? I mean, you know, a lot of people just rubbish all of this. They're just saying it's kind of fake.
A lot of people in the media and the political cast rubbish lots of this. When I was down in London, that's not the experience I had from public. It was so much love and admiration we had from the public, and obviously some people angry as well. But for the most part, people who are engaged with this are incredibly supportive. And I was reading recently something interesting about the countries which have the most local XR groups, which are the United Kingdom, the United States and Canada.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the three countries in the Western world that still use the first-past-the-post voting system.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that people who have voted for green things in the past or have not found any political way to express that they want green environmental change,
yeah,
and ecological change,
yeah,
this is where they're moving towards and this is what they want to be doing now, because we have an avenue for this anger at the criminal inaction.
Yeah, and this is, I think, also something that I'm, you know, in my own country, I come from India, and there are huge issues when it comes to environmental degradation, and particularly because they're struggling to come out of, they're calling themselves developing, right? And so there's all this infrastructure that's being built, and there's all this money that's being spent, and that's obviously taking a toll. But until it starts getting recognized by political parties, and it's, some of this has also crept in into their manifestos. The elections, you know, are on at this point in time in my country. So it's made it to party manifestos. But how much of that is going to be delivered is really the tricky question, isn't it? Because all eyes are on countries like India and China.
That's true. I think that's sort of something which is encompassed in our third demand, which is the People's Assembly, because it gives my voice the same credence as it does yours and everyone listening and everyone else.
Yeah.
Into how we want to move forward. There are a number of proposals that we could put forward to meet a carbon neutrality target by 2025. But it's having the political class listen to the scientists. There was a report that came out in 2010, I think it was,
mm-hmm,
by the National School of Sciences in the US that says 97% of climate scientists agree that, agree with human-made climate change, and then the IPCC says we've got now 11 years to drastically decarbonize if we want to meet a 1.5-degree global temperature increase maximum. So the science is already there and tells us what we have to do.
Mm-hmm.
So it's getting government to listen to the scientists, and hopefully we are the middleman for that, if that makes sense.
Well, there aren't many famous faces, but you got a really big heavyweight who threw her lot behind Extinction Rebellion, none other than Emma Thompson herself. And it's important that you have, you know, known names and faces also back this. So how much was that important for you guys, just having her sort of say, yeah, I'm with these guys?
It was great. It's always great to have people tell us that we're doing the right thing, because you do need it to be reaffirmed, because there's been so little, before this, there's been so little media attention put into these issues. You do feel sometimes like, oh, am I doing the right thing? Is this where I need to be at? And to have that reaffirmed by people you respect and also by the science, then you go, that's fantastic. This is what I need to be
but
doing.
But then a lot of people start saying, yeah, she's taking transatlantic flights.
Yeah.
and causing, you know, all these carbon emissions. So, of course, that's a rather silly one. But at the same time, it really calls for, it's a call to action with the kind of lives we live as well.
It is. And to that first point, I mean, it's important that we are not a movement looking to blame and shame people for individual actions they take, because the Carbon Majors Report 2017 showed that 71% of global carbon emissions come from just 100 companies. And those companies are enabled by governments around the world to, and then, amongst those companies were the big fossil fuel giants, BP, Shell, ExxonMobil, and others.
And financial firms.
I can't say, I'm not sure if they're on the list. I'm sure they're there.
Yeah, they were. Yeah,
are they? Fantastic.
Yeah,
good.
They had it.
And so our aim is to stop, have the government put regulations on those companies and have it be a governmental change, rather than saying, you drive to work and you use too much. We're not doing that.
Yeah. All right. Okay. Well, it's going to take some ordinary love is what it's going to take to set this planet back on its feet. Thank you so much, Vinay. And I guess it's young folks like you and folks like me also to kind of go and save the day. It really takes some drastic re-engineering of the way we're living and the way we think. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Cambridge 105 Radio.